Welcome back to the Ryer on YouTube channel. Who needs Monday Night Football? We've got Monday Night Second Helping live here on the channel. Travis Ryer, alongside my great friend and co-host, Mr. Brent Beard, longtime college football analyst, most recently for First Coast News, down there in Jacksonville, Florida. Brent, of course, also a voter for the most prestigious honor in collegiate athletics, the Heisman Trophy. Brent, man, we got a lot to cover on a Monday night from the previous weekend of SEC action. Of course, later in the week, we'll look ahead to week three. No shortage of intriguing matchups on the horizon as well. But we'll also get into our superlatives for week two. We like to do that as we recap and look at the previous games. Just some initial thoughts from what we saw over the weekend, Brent, here in week two.
Well, the competition is revving up from last weekend. Certainly will carry over to this weekend. You can make the debate. Texas and Tennessee is kind of leading the pack right now. And with some really impressive performance, some close to almost wins by in Arkansas. I think some really disappointing performances, too, that we'll get into certainly by Kentucky. I'm a little
I'll tell you this, though, Brent, man, when you look at the top seven or eight in the polls right now, it looks pretty good for the Southeastern Conference. You're right. I mean, just in terms of like ACC matchups for the SEC to this point, there's been some stinkers, been some clunkers, Florida, Miami, Auburn, and Cal from over the weekend. Ooh. But, you know, we're going to talk about Texas going into the Big House and taking care of business against the Michigan Wolverines. There were a couple teams like Alabama and Oklahoma found themselves deep into non-conference matchups in week two. In the fourth quarter with still things in the balance. But what we'll start out with is some superlatives from week two and what we like to do. We'll get into our surprise of the week. And, Brent, there's some candidates here, boy, whether you're talking about disappointing performances or really impressive performances. Where does this one start for you?
I think as far as disappointing performances, I think you've got to start with Auburn, don't you?
I think that would qualify as a surprise and a disappointment.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. I mean, Peyton Thorne was, frankly, abysmal, throwing four interceptions. Now, look, Cal is not a great team, but from last year to this year, Trav, one thing you've talked about and we've talked about before, sometimes you just get in bad matchups of teams. And frankly, Cal is a bad matchup for Auburn
But should they be in year two under Hugh Freeze? I think that's the question I have if I'm an Auburn fan coming off that one. I get it last year, especially going on the road to Berkeley. But to be on your home field, and this was a Cal team that wasn't whole. They had players out. Just by the eye test, Cal didn't exactly impress you. But, you know, you talked about it in the offseason, this Auburn offensive line. What were we going to see exactly? I talked about the back end, the secondary. I still see some concerns back there as well. But give Cal a lot of credit. Sometimes watching that game Saturday from Jordan-Hare Stadium, I thought it was the 85 Bears instead of the Cal Bears. And we can talk about Peyton Thorne and his effectiveness and, you know, struggles he had throughout the game. But I thought Hugh Freeze hit on it a couple times when they went down to the sideline report. And he said it, you know, we're just struggling to protect Peyton, too. That probably surprised me as much as anything.
Yeah, I would agree with that. There are two stats that tell me right now where Auburn is. The first one is since Freeze came to Auburn in 11 combined Power Four games, Auburn quarterbacks, the touchdown to interception ratio, Travis, is almost an unheard of 15 to 15.
Wow. Yeah, that doesn't work. No, that type of inefficiency. And so, you know, for Auburn, it's back to the drawing board, a game against another team from the state of New Mexico. That didn't go so well last time around. New Mexico State last November shocked Hugh and the Tigers there on the Plains. This time it's going to be Bronco Mendenhall bringing the, the Lobos.
Yeah.
The Lobos of New Mexico coming up. And then you start thinking about SEC play. A lot more, I think, for this Auburn team to fix or to get going in the right direction than I anticipated a couple of games into the year two under Hugh Freeze. I'll give you my surprise of the week, man. For me, it had to be South Carolina. Not to just go into Lexington and win, but do it in such commanding fashion. I was wrong. You know, I thought that was a downward spiraling type of situation for Shane Beamer with Lenore Sellers there at quarterback. But I think we saw some things that you wanted to see from this team. You've talked about Rocket Sanders, the transfer from Arkansas, having an impact on the offensive side of the ball. Sellers early in the game, especially against the blitz, I thought he just kind of went deer in the headlights a couple of times. But he did seem to settle in on the road as that game moved along.
He did. Yeah, I would agree with that. 159 yards, two touchdowns, had one pick, didn't lose either of his fumbles with that. Now, their passing yardage, and again, it's early, and these stats almost mean nothing right now, but they're 122 in the nation, and passing yardage, 280 combined. But I tell you what, the thing that really got my attention was their defense and what they were able to do to put pressure all over Kentucky. And this, for instance, Tramp, this freshman, Dylan Stewart, 2.5 sacks, two hurries. This guy is big time, and that's going to be a very interesting he and Kyle Kennard versus Will Camber and Emory Jones. We'll get into that later. But it was just one of those things that the Carolina defense kind of set the tempo for the whole game, didn't they?
Yeah, the stat lines for the quarterbacks were kind of flipped from what I thought they might be. Lenore Sellers ended up finishing 10 of 14 for 166 and two tutties. He did have an interception. He was sacked four times. Brock Vandergrift, just 3 of 10 for 30 yards and an interception. Ooh. Vandergrift sacked four times. The rushing numbers, Sanders didn't exactly pile it up, but I thought Robbie Ashford was used in a way too.
He was.
By Beamer and this staff to kind of help supplement that run game. Still didn't blow you away on paper, but got enough from that, got enough from Sellers in the passing game. Mm-hmm. And of course, as we talked about, that defense for the Gamecocks, more than enough. And as you outlined, alluded to there, big one coming up on this Saturday with LSU in town for a noon kickoff and College Game Day going to be in COLA. Haven't said that much post Steve Spurrier, have we?
Yeah. Listen, I don't know about you, and I'm not trying to be disparaging against South Carolina. Travis, I was shocked to that to some degree. I guess maybe they saw the South Carolina performance. It's early in the season. Shane Beamer and what he's trying to build and to be able to look at that. I thought they may have even gone with Missouri and Boston College being two ranked teams in this thing. But yeah, but that's great publicity for South Carolina.
Absolutely. And let's talk about our players of the week here for week two in the Southeastern Conference. I'm going to go with the obvious in the SEC office sort of, but I had some candidates, not just offensive guys. Tim Keenan, the defensive tackle for Alabama, was high on my list. I mean, a big guy with 9 tackles, couple and a half for loss, a sack and a half or so for Tim Keenan. He was on my list. But I got to go Quinn Ewers for that performance up in Ann Arbor. And also, boy, Sark, like Lane, when they get in those bags, especially from the outset, and they kind of got you figured out. And I know Wink Martindale is considered to be one of the better defensive minds in all of football today, not just college football. And I think Wink also would tell you he's one of the better defensive minds in all of football. But boy, that was a humbling for Wink and that proud Michigan program, especially on the defensive side of the ball, because really didn't have an answer. And in the second half, Sark just kind of, the situation, let's get out of here. You know, I mean, it was such a commanding situation for Texas. you know, not going to put too much out there in that situation. Just get on the plane and get home.
I'll tell you what, one thing they really deserve some credit for is, okay, you lose Byron Murphy and Devontae Sweat, but then you've got Alfred Collins and a defensive line, Trav, that was dominating a lot of ways. So that's a boy, that and he said, Sark did at the beginning of the year, they had depth they've never had before. And you can see that on that D line, can't you?
You can. You can. And they did hit the portal to an extent to kind of stay a little older.
Yeah.
If not as physically imposing as what they were with the departures of those two bigs that you talked about. But again, Ewers was masterful. I thought it was quarterback clinic tape from him, and he got the tight end involved. Gunnar Helm was just devastatingly effective for the Longhorns in that win. But Quinn, 24-36, 246. Three touchdowns, and you want to talk about offensive lines. What about Texas in terms of protection? Now, Sark does a great job of getting the ball out of his quarterback's hand, so that helps. And then this Texas run game with the issues that they had from an injury perspective, leading rusher for the Longhorns, that's Ryan Wingo, the wide receiver, the freshman wide receiver on the reverse. But I still thought they got enough out of Jaden Blue and Wisner and Gibson. And then to go along with Helm at the tight end position, Isaiah Bond with three catches for 51 yards. It was just a very, very efficient and smoothly run operation on the offensive side. And we're going to check in with Steven here. Steven Burton in the chat, Brent, our live show chat here. If you'd like to chime in, feel free to do that. Steven says, I expect Michigan to struggle this year. Don't know if that win is as big as it seems. I will say this. I'm not going to undervalue going into Ann Arbor against the defending national champions and getting the job done. I also can't agree with Steven to an extent. This isn't obviously last year's Michigan, starting at the quarterback position. And really, Michigan last year had the feel, Brent, to me, of a mid-major in college basketball in a previous era where you would have these four or five guys that would come in together. And then by their fourth year, you didn't want to see them in the NCAA tournament. Not that Michigan wasn't talented, because obviously the NFL draft last April told us that was a talented team. But it was a team that had been together and been through it and went through a process as a team before making its run a year ago. Now it feels like with Michigan, it's almost at a start over point. And you try to climb again in 2 or 3 years if you're that program. So there you go. There are our players of the week. Actually, did you have Quinn as your player of the week, or do you have somebody else in mind?
I'm going to throw Henry Parrish from Ole Miss in there. Yeah, 14 for 165, only had four touchdowns. A lot. Now, Trev, I could go with Jackson Dart. 24 straight completions.
New Ole Miss record. 24 straight to open the game. Had 30 straight going back to the previous game. And look, I know it's a lot of quick game with Lane. Like, you know, there's going to be some easy throws off the quick stuff. But early in the game, Dart was hitting some really nice throws in the middle of the field and was spreading it around, too, to his wide receivers, got depth there. He's got an experienced tight end back. But you're right. Parrish was, as we talked about, Lane, first and foremost, would love to get that run game going.
True. Yeah, absolutely. And that needs to be repeated almost every week. People think he's going over the top all the time. But what makes him so dangerous is to be able to establish that run game. And because Travis, you know, at this point, and again, when we consider the competition, and they've got an interesting game in Wake Forest that you pointed to the whole season. But I mean, what they throw at you is almost overwhelming at times.
It really is. I mean, there is just so much to digest when it comes to that offense. And boy, it was really Parrish from the outset, though, against Middle Tennessee on Saturday. You still have Trey Harris you have to deal with, Watkins, you bring in Juice Wells from South Carolina. It's a lot. And that defense, too, did a number on Middle Tennessee for much of that game in Oxford last Saturday. So we'll talk about now our team on the rise in the Southeastern Conference after week two, Brent. Let's consider some of the options. I don't think Texas qualifies because they've been up there. That's the thing. That's what makes this tough. You've got so many teams in the SEC in the top seven or eight in the polls right now nationally. Who do you really look at? I got to say, though, I think in terms of national perspective, it's the Tennessee Vols after that performance against NC State, because that was a bigger stage in Charlotte, national television, Reese and Herbie on the call. And boy, that game had a feel to me almost of Georgia and Clemson, because it was a one score game at the half. I think it was 10-3 Tennessee at the half Saturday night, but it didn't really feel like it, because you could see for yourself that there was a pretty visible difference between the participants when you looked at the Tennessee players and you looked at just the NC State players. And then in the second half, the levee broke, and Dylan Sampson, running back that we talked about for Tennessee, stepping into a bigger role with a couple of departures, including Jalen Wright. He lived up to it for sure. And that defense that you've talked about a lot, especially that defensive front, definitely lived up. Grayson McCall, I think the NC State quarterback, would attest to that.
And really what kind of broke the game was Will Brooks' pick six that he took to the house. Very impressive. My stars, when you look at these defensive numbers, Trav, they held NC State to 143 total yards, 39 on the ground, forcing three turnovers, and two short yardage fourth down stops too. I mean, they look, we knew they would be good throwing the ball with Nico and running it with Samson. And what's really going to be interesting is in a couple of weeks when they go to Oklahoma. But man, oh man, this defense, I'm sure we thought that it might be possible, but they have come out of the gate and as one of the best Tennessee defenses we've seen in a long time.
Really, really physical up front. Play with an edge also. Play with an attitude, a physicality that hasn't been there really in any type of consistent way over the last 15, 17 years, really, when I think of Tennessee football. Been some really great players, don't get me wrong, but I'm talking about unit-wide and even in some depth areas as well. Look, it's always going to be largely about Nico. And look, wide receivers in the passing game, not just the wide receivers, tight ends were big. Heupel kind of showed you a little bit of that full arsenal, not just in the passing game, but also the run game. You're right, a couple of weeks, that trip to Norman. You know, I've had some Oklahoma fans get after me for bringing up perhaps the possibility of a struggling start for OU.
Oh,
yeah. SEC play. And it wasn't even so much that I was I am down on OU. It's just what I kind of anticipated beginning with Tennessee in Norman in a couple of weeks. What about the team on the decline right now in the Southeastern Conference? If you were to pick one, Brent, I think I got to go Kentucky. I know it was just one game.
Same.
But on your home field to be dismantled like that by South Carolina. And here's the other part of that for Kentucky. Guess who you got coming in this Saturday?
Hey, look, if they thought it was tough last week, Trav, they haven't seen anything yet, have they?
Coming down the tracks, 2-2. Yep, here come the Georgia Bulldogs.
Ooh.
Not a good situation for Kentucky right now. I mean, we had talked about Kentucky, and I still feel this way. I still think it will happen as a shoe-in for a ninth straight year as a bowl team, but made it a lot tougher on themselves after last Saturday in that performance against the South Carolina Gamecocks. What about, Brent, the team with the most to prove moving forward? I got an idea about this one. I don't know about you. I've actually got a couple teams. I think Alabama has something to prove coming up because of the coaching change and the performance, and give South Florida a lot of credit with that. But I'll if you want Alabama, I'll go with another. I'll go Texas A&M.
Yes.
And I think Florida could probably fall in there too. But those two teams those two teams get together this week, A&M getting a much needed win over McNeese, an FCS opponent last Saturday in College Station. Connor Wigman, that looked more like what we anticipated seeing. Probably hurts you a little bit to be an Aggie fan to see Notre Dame turn around and do what it did at home
really
against Illinois. You're really wondering what the heck you've got in your football team. But an opportunity to go on the road against a struggling Florida team and show that you can turn this thing around, get headed in the right direction. I'm going to go Texas A&M with Wigman making that start on the road this week.
Well, and look, I'll go with Florida because they've got a lot to prove. And DJ Lagway gave them some hope. Really had a great game, 456 yards, three touchdowns. He made he made a pass into the end zone.
Yeah,
that Shane Matthews, the former Gator great, actually said that was the greatest pass he's ever seen on Florida field.
Wow.
And what about that? That is a mouthful there. But I tell you what, and we'll get into this a lot later on. This game is gargantuan, isn't it, for both these teams as far as needing something badly. And I'm going to get into this more later on the week. But Trav, this is a stat you rarely ever see. Texas A&M has lost 10 straight road games. Their most recent road win in the league, October 16th, 2021, over Missouri.
Wow.
That's unbelievable. So, to say the least, and back to your point, here are easily two teams. And again, A&M right now, they're giving up a lot of rushing yards. They're 109th nationally. But to say the least, this is a prove it game, is it not?
Prove it for both these teams. And we heard from Billy Napier earlier in the week. And the performances for both A&M and Florida last Saturday were but performances. They were encouraging, but those were FCS opponents. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like Napier is intent on playing both Graham Mertz and DJ Lagway, the expectation being that Mertz is going to start the game. You know, I said this almost upon the moment that Mertz went out against Miami, that if there's a path for Billy Napier to get another year at Florida, it's going to involve Lagway more than it is Mertz. Mm-hmm. And part of me really, really, the parent in me especially, really appreciates Napier not just tucking and running from Mertz at this point. You know, showing some loyalty to the guy who showed loyalty to your program and coming back. You know, I'm sure Mertz, if he wanted to go NIL or the portal, you know, could have walked into a even better situation than he's in at Florida right now.
Sure.
But you got to win games too. And if it's even close with what we saw from Lagway against, I understand it's Samford.
Yeah.
The thing about Lagway is even at this point in his development for that offense and that team, he looks like the kind of guy that can lift everybody around him.
True.
Already.
True.
Whereas Graham Mertz, I'd love to have Graham Mertz in a ready-made situation with the pieces around him good to go. Now, Florida's got some guys. I mean, Trey Wilson, Montrell Johnson, we know all that.
Mm-hmm.
But they can't always protect a guy like Graham Mertz the way you would like. So Lagway can help. The point being, Lagway can cover for some deficiencies in a lot more areas because of his makeup than, say, can a Graham Mertz.
Yeah, and I'll tell you real quick, one thing that they need to improve on is that they're just averaging 4.9 yards per rush. Now, again, that's 5 yards. You put the two of them together, you got a first down. But the reality of it is, Trav, for an offense like this, they need to be averaging, what, 6-7 yards per rush at least, is something like that. And again, you tie it back to this offensive line. Austin Barber was the top-rated player in the game. Jake Slaughter, that I think they really like. But that, again, And Florida's like a lot of teams in this league right now. That offensive line's a work in progress.
You don't like to hear that if you're a Florida fan.
No.
Going into the third game of the season. And this is the thing, you know, we'll talk more about it later in the week. That's not what you want to be doing against this Texas A&M defense either.
Mm-mm.
We got Rhythmless One here checking in. We appreciate the live viewers. Rhythmless One being among them. He says, don't forget old Vanderbilt, 2-0, baby. That's right. We're going to talk more about Vanderbilt coming up here. I mean, we're the Diego Pavia.
That's right.
You know, this is the fan club for Diego Tador right here. Absolutely. No doubt about that. And we appreciate Rhythmless and everyone tuning in here live. And if you haven't already, subscribe to the YouTube channel, Ryer on YouTube. If you would do that, go ahead and hit the subscribe button. Hit that notification bell as well. That way you are alerted to all the content as it drops here on the channel, like Second Helping. And of course, if you don't mind, a thumbs up would help us out tremendously as well. So Brent, what we'll do now is we'll get back more into the week that was. We already pretty much covered Ole Miss and that performance against Middle Tennessee from Saturday. So we'll move back and we'll get into Arkansas and Oklahoma State. I pretty much saw every snap of this game. And in some ways, it brought Houston Nutt back to mind. Some of those crazy games with Houston Nutt at Arkansas.
Absolutely.
And Talon Green at quarterback, 6'5", 6'6", doing it with his arm, doing it with his legs. Made me think of Matt Jones. Remember the late Matt Jones?
Oh,
the
kind
of freak athlete he was with Houston?
It was.
That's what it made me think of in some ways. But in too many other ways, it's what we've seen too much of from Arkansas in the last year or so under Sam Pittman. And that's a team that looks to be superior to an opponent. And I know Oklahoma State, 16th ranked, whatever. If Oklahoma State is legitimately the 16th best team in the country, we don't need to go beyond 12 for the playoff, really. Because this is what we're looking at. Hey, Oklahoma State's going to be right there in the Big 12. I get it. But, and I give Pittman and Bobby Petrino a lot of credit. They were ready for this football game. But again, just too many catastrophic mistakes. You can't throw pick sixes on the road. You can't muff punts inside your own 30 on the road. And Arkansas did all of those things. So when you look at the numbers, Talon Green, 416 passing yards. Jaquindon Jackson, 149 rushing yards, three rushing touchdowns. Andrew Armstrong for Arkansas, 10 catches, 164 yards. And you still managed to lose the game. You know, that's I thought Talon Green was extremely fun to watch. And as a viewer and a consumer, I appreciate that. As a fan, though, I still need someone that can manage the football game at the quarterback position.
Yes.
And for all of the highlights and the wow plays that you're going to get from a Talon Green, if he doesn't clean some things up, again, in terms of management, there's going to be more of this for Arkansas. So encouraging in a lot of ways.
Yes.
With Arkansas. But then, and too many others, just catastrophic in the mistakes they continue to make.
Yeah, they do. And look, I'm with you. I thought they were well prepared for the game. They really should have won the game. Their run defense through three quarters, I mean, they basically held Ollie Gordon next to nothing. It was like 2.9
yards.
Did a
good job.
Really did. But Trav, the thing that really got to me was you're in the second overtime. You're holding Oklahoma State to next to nothing. You've got them at a long field goal that they may lose. And then your defenders, they pick up the ball carrier and they slam him to the ground. And you've got a personal foul. I'll tell you what, I have
losing
seen that.
Losing teams do losing stuff.
Yes.
And everybody thinks it's all about talent. And it's a lot about talent. But there are just things culture-wise or discipline-wise that losing teams do. And Arkansas illustrated that Saturday as well as any losing team you could pick from.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And listen, somebody made the point to me, when in the world would Nick Saban or Coach Paul Bear Bryant, or, I mean, just pick one of the greats have done in a situation like that when that player comes to the sidelines. But Trav, it's all, I'm not going to say it's epidemic, but I've seen FSU do it. I've seen Florida do it. And it just is.
It's a stench. It's the hardest thing to get. It's the hardest thing to separate the program from. Once it gets on you, man, once that gets on you, that stench, it's the hardest thing. You look at Nick Saban and other great coaches in their first year or so, that was probably the toughest thing. I know the talent in a lot of those situations was subpar too, but that there was also just a cleansing of these programs that has to take place.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but see, though, and you and I have seen some great coaches, even on the high school level. I can tell you, Corky Rogers at the Bowl School.
There would have been
a lot of that. There'd have been a lot of long talks about. Look, you make the play, but you make the play under control. And you keep your emotions in check. And listen, to your point, Trav, those are things that can cost you a ball game. And I'm not saying that necessarily did, but it certainly did not help to give Oklahoma State new life.
I think Arkansas was so clearly better than Oklahoma State. And Mike Gundy, I think, said it today. He said, we had no clue against the Arkansas offense. Bobby Petrino put them in stuffed the Oklahoma State defense in a locker for pretty much 60 minutes. Now, Bobby too can lose his mind a little bit when it starts rolling for him offensively. He kind of can get into hold my beer and watch this mode. You know, if Arkansas would have just done half of the things, committed half of the mistakes, the unnecessary mistakes that they did in that game, they still would have won. They were that much better, I thought.
They were. I agree with that totally. Yes.
But our guy Tex Tider, hey Tex, what's up on a Monday night? Tex knows the deal. He says, hit that thumbs up, folks. Yeah, let's do that. Let's do that. Rhythmless wants to check back in. He wants to talk about Mississippi State, Brent. And boy, you know, there is really no Pac-12 anymore. But imagine if there were.
Yeah.
What that would sound like right now. USC beats LSU.
Right.
Cal goes into Jordan-Hare Stadium and beats Auburn. And then you have Mississippi State go out to Tempe and get woodshedded. That game was actually competitive there going into the second quarter. But boy, in that second quarter, Arizona State really showed Jeff Lebby's team the gap.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, and the thing that stuck out to me was State's run defense was horrific in that game. And that's certainly something that they'll work on. I mean, they fought back, got into it, but, and they've got and they need a big win with the Toledo this week. And look, I can slowly see, I'm curious if you do too, offensively, when they get into a rhythm to a degree, I think they'll mature and get better. But that was a very unfortunate game to lose, and for dog fans sitting up past midnight, Trav.
Yeah, and I will say this for Lebby. There are positives to take from that loss relative to, say, Arkansas, where you're into a tenure several years in now. Did come back from that 27-3 halftime deficit to certainly make it interesting. Later in that game, Blake Shapen, the Baylor transfer, throws for 268 and two touchdowns. We talked about this, the departure of Woody Marks at the running back position at USC, how that was going to impact this offense. Kevin Coleman, a transfer, coming in with four catches for 103 yards and a touchdown. But, boy, it's tough. Anytime you go on the road, you get down 27-3 at the half.
Really.
The chances of coming back from that are obviously very slim. But again, maybe some things that Lebby can take from that in a positive nature as you get back into continue into non-conference play and a look ahead to Southeastern Conference action. What about the Georgia Bulldogs? No surprise there, right, Brent?
No.
The home opener in Athens goes according to plan as the Bulldogs take apart Tennessee Tech 48-3. Carson Beck throws for 242 and 5 touchdowns. The debut of Trevor Etienne. We were wondering when that might happen. He goes 5 carries for 78 yards. Big play specialist Arian Smith at the wide receiver position, 4 catches, 73 yards. Those tight ends continue to be a big part of this Georgia offense. And now, 2 games into the season, Georgia defensively has yet to give up a touchdown.
Yeah, that's just really amazing. And 2 things here on Beck's numbers. To me, the most impressive was that 0 by the interceptions. He continues to that to me is where he excels. And look, you know, there's always going to be one of these young guys who stand up. How about KJ Bolden through 2 weeks, 6 tackles, a tackle for loss. They really like him at safety. Yeah. Trev, does it ever surprise you that development of these dog players? And look, Kirby can tell these freshmen and these high school seniors, look, if you're good enough, you can compete. You may be playing.
And maybe, you know, it's a big part of the NIL situation at Georgia not needing to be what it has to be at some other places. You don't need NIL when you got that much NFL. It's still obviously a big part of today's game, but absolutely Georgia now looking to go into SEC play. And as we talked about with Kentucky after that performance in Lexington at Kroger Field last week, wonder about the competitiveness now of that one.
Yes.
With the Dogs. Also last Saturday, Missouri as a top 10 team takes care of business. That's all Missouri can do with the schedule. We can talk about the schedule all we want.
Yes.
But Missouri continues to take care of business in impressive fashion. A shutout, I think, if I'm a Missouri fan, that encourages me as much as anything, given the staff changes, the personnel changes on that side of the ball. 38-0 Missouri over Buffalo on Saturday. Brady Cook doing his thing. Nate Noel, 12 carries, 73 yards. Saw him in a little bit of wildcat down there in the red zone as well. It's not all Luther Burden, although he's probably enough at the wide receiver position. I don't think enough people talk about Theo Weiss being back.
No,
he reaffirmed that on Saturday, 13 catches, 149 yards, and suddenly a top 25 matchup with Boston College coming to town.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive. And hopefully Burden's okay. He actually left the game with a with an injury, but Weiss really stepped up and played well. By the way, first time since 1935 the Missouri's had 2 straight shutouts, so that's rather impressive to say the least. Brady Cook just kind of doing Brady Cook things. Marcus Carroll. Nate Noel. I mean, you know, just some guys that a lot of people don't know about, but this team continues to play well. And you're right about that. Not a lot of people thought at the beginning of the year, that Missouri Boston College would be one of the, 2 games that this week with ranked teams.
Yeah. And that kind of explains why game day is going to be in the other Columbia, because there isn't a lot of ranked team action across college football in the upcoming weekend. So let's keep it moving. We'll talk about Alabama 42, South Florida 16. We're going to get into a couple of games here in the later window with Houston and Oklahoma being similar. South Florida, Alabama, once it was over, the Crimson Tide with a 26-point win, but boy, midway through that fourth quarter, that is a tight affair in Tuscaloosa. The Crimson Tide gets it done with 21 late to separate itself from, I'm telling you, it's going to be a really good AAC team, I think, in South Florida. And an AAC team with Alex Golish as the head coach, previously the offensive coordinator at Tennessee, probably helped his buddy Josh Heupel out. Did this last year probably too. Yeah. It didn't help too much because Alabama ended up beating Tennessee a year ago. But he also, Alex Golish did, not just for Josh Heupel, he gave Kalen DeBoer a list of things that his team might need to work on.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, no doubt about it. And obviously there's a lot to do with the offensive line. Also, not everything can be laid on number 75 for me, but certainly Caden Proctor is anticipated to be back soon, and they're looking forward to that. Elijah Pritchett came in and certainly made a difference. The stars at skill position continue to do what they do. Ryan Williams is slowly, or maybe not slowly, becoming a superstar. We thought both banks would be very impressive, and they have been. But look, I give South Florida a lot of credit. And Trav, this is a little side note here, but South Florida is one of those teams that you hear about that when all this ACC expansion and teams leaving, that one of the teams that may end up joining the ACC at some point will be a South Florida. So we'll keep that in mind, but they've made strides.
They absolutely have. Golish is an animated guy. He's an emotional guy. Was surprised in a 21-13 game.
Yeah.
He kicked the field goal down there inside the Alabama 10. I mean, what do you got to lose? Ultimately, you end up losing by 26 anyway. Mm-hmm. So it didn't help you cosmetically to kick the field goal and make it a 5-point game. But no, he has certainly done a nice job there with the Bulls. Rhythmless checking in here in the comments. An Alabama fan says, I realize Wilkin Formby is still a young guy. The Alabama offensive tackle who had his struggles for sure against South Florida last Saturday night. Rhythmless continues, but the difference in that O-line when Pritchett came in is undeniable. I don't think it's deniable, but I will say this. I mean, it was a point in the game where you weren't asking Elijah Pritchett to pass protect one-on-one either. You're pretty much running the football in that situation. And look, I think Elijah Pritchett can be a capable offensive tackle for Alabama. But I still think Wilkin Formby is going to be a really good player. For whatever reason, perhaps it was the step up. You know, going from Western Kentucky to South Florida is still a pretty big step up.
Sure is.
South Florida is not going to bring you just one or two looks. South Florida will mix it up, bring pressures, drop out of pressures, confuse you in terms of who you're supposed to block. And then there is a step up in ability from WKU to USF. But it was a tough night for Wilkin Formby. There is no denying that.
No.
Did I see enough, though, from Elijah Pritchett in about 6 minutes and 15 snaps to think, oh, yeah, it's fine if you just plug Elijah Pritchett in there. You get Caden Proctor back at left tackle. I'm a little worried about Caden Proctor.
Oh, yeah.
I hadn't played football in a long time. As far as game action, you're going on the road at Wisconsin this week.
Yeah, really.
15-point favorites, game Alabama should win. It's a good matchup for Alabama in terms of styles. But I'm not going to – yeah, and I know Rhythmless points that out here too. He understands that Wilkin's a redshirt freshman. But it will be interesting to see how that plays out. I think for Alabama, the key is on that offensive line – getting everybody back together for the first time this year.
Yeah.
You know, you haven't had that yet in two games. You haven't had your left tackle. The only thing I don't like about shuffling offensive lines, and I understand they kind of felt like they had to because even Pritchett last week was banged up, is that you kind of weaken yourself. Like, your interior trio at Alabama is maybe the best in all of college football.
Yeah.
So when you have to start moving guys like Booker from left guard to left tackle now – with Geno Vandermark at left guard, you're not going to be as strong in the interior. But perhaps that'll happen as soon as this week, because it sounds like Caden Proctor is going to ramp it up during the practice week and see where that takes him in advance of the trip to Camp Randall. How about the Vanderbilt Commodores, by the way? Diego Avila, just 83 passing yards. You know, you didn't really, didn't really need Diego in a 55-0 route of Alcorn State. Nate Johnson, the backup, rushes for 69 yards on just two carries. 55-0 for the 2-0 Brent Beard.
That's right.
Vanderbilt Commodores. What about that?
Yeah, he's tough with the 13 rushes for 51 yards, and he didn't turn it over at that point, too. Now, hopefully they won't get the big head. But I tell you this, though, Trav, if they start 3-0, we may need to go up there and start a parade for them.
Oh, man. It's a kind of weird, and we'll talk about this later in the week, Thursday, when we're back with more second helping. Weird road game, I guess, this week. Yeah, I mean, it's really Vanderbilt, so you kind of, I guess, have to do the one-for-ones or the home-and-homes.
Right.
Kind of like, in some ways, Ole Miss going to Wake. But, yeah, this is sort of a character test for Vandy. How do they handle this situation? Yes. It's a very winnable game. Just down the road in Atlanta, take on Georgia State. Sean Elliott left that program to become an assistant at South Carolina over the offseason. So, we'll find out. Yeah. I like Pavia, among other things, because he seems like the type of guy intangibly – mm-hmm. He's going to bring so much energy on a day-to-day basis. You're not probably going to, not going to see much of a drop off or a potential letdown for Vanderbilt. Let's keep things moving here. We got a couple more games to cover before we get out of here. LSU and Nicholls State, the Tigers with a 23-14 halftime lead. I think that game was a little more competitive than people thought it would be. Nicholls State, 0-2 off the FCS level, of course. Garrett Nussmeier, 6 touchdown passes, Brent. How about that? Still didn't run the ball probably as well as Brian Kelly would like, but you got Aaron Anderson at the receiver position, C.J. Daniels at the receiver position, Mason Taylor at a tight end, and that's before you talk about Kyron Lacy. So you know what you have right now. As a passing offense, it's just being more complete and still trying to get through some things defensively, because it looks like Nicholls State was able to run the football a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, and listen, that they continue to have awful injury situations. Jacoby and Guillory, one of their defensive tackles, a torn Achilles, will miss the rest of the season. He was he'd come back for his 5th season, 27 tackles last year. That's not a lot, but look, he provided him some depth. And that's one thing that, and you know, we talked about Emory, the running back, being out for the year. That's tough stuff there, but on a brighter note,
early. It's too early for that stuff.
It really is.
You kind of anticipate that over the course of a season.
Yeah.
But when it starts happening in week one and week two, like it's happened to LSU, you're left to wonder what's this going to look like in seven or eight. You know, you're not even really sniffing October yet.
No.
And you're down a couple of important pieces. Jonesy here checking in. In the show chat. Hope you guys are well. Love your show. Thank you, Jonesy. Appreciate the kind words. Absolutely. Enjoy doing it. No doubt about it. So LSU now with that early kickoff, which I think you like if you're LSU, get on into COLA.
Yeah.
Get that early kickoff. Don't give those South Carolina fans too much of an opportunity to get greased up and ready to go on Saturday. Houston in Oklahoma. The Sooners hang on, man. Houston had the football with a desperation opportunity there at the end of regulation. Oklahoma's defense gets the job done for the most part. Jackson Arnold throws for 174 and a couple of touchdowns. There's that interception, though, again, that we've talked about in the past. Not especially effective, I guess, running the football. Deion Burks, 9 catches, 53 yards. But story of this one was Brent Venables and his defense, and going into this one, we didn't expect much resistance from Houston because they were coming off a home loss to UNLV. Mm-hmm. Willie Fitz, a good football coach.
He is. Yeah.
But it looks like what we've talked about a lot. Oklahoma really needed this ramp up before Tennessee comes to town in a couple of Saturdays, and they still get Tulane that's going to be coming off a pretty energy-wrenching loss at home to Kansas State last weekend.
Yeah, they're concerned about Jackson, I think. 174 yards on 32 attempts. As you mentioned, really never got anything going in the running game. 75 yards on 29 carries. Now, another thing was that special teams, they had two muff punts in the game. That Trav, in a game of that magnitude, that is, boy, that could spell disaster. I had a couple of, gee whiz, unsportsmanlike conduct penalties. So they did enough to be able to lose a game. But as you said, the defense hung in there. I don't know if you saw Brent Venables after the game was over, Trav. I think even Venables thought that, that they very well may end up losing that game. But it tells you something about the Oklahoma offense when Venables talked a whole lot about his punter.
Yeah, I don't think that's what the OU fan base wants to hear.
No.
With Tennessee.
Absolutely not.
On the not too distant horizon to Josh Heupel homecoming. Yeah. You know, I'm looking, I didn't see all of this game or even a lot of it, but Gavin Sawchuk, 4 carries, 4 yards.
Yeah, really.
The long run of 2. I mean, is there something up with Sawchuk? Because as we talked about, he really ended last season on a high note. Just 75 rushing yards on 29 carries for the Sooners against the Houston Cougars last Saturday night. Oof, that's putting a lot on Jackson Arnold in that passing game. And as we talked about, Jackson still has a tendency at this point to maybe turn it over from time to time. Well, Brent, that pretty much does it for last Saturday in the Southeastern Conference.
It was another wild weekend in the SEC. We continue to learn a lot, but we need to caution everybody. It's a long season, and some of the if you're not happy about some stuff right now, a lot of that may change as it goes around. But the as we said, the competition is heating up this weekend and particularly next weekend.
Boy, some big games for some coaches, no doubt about it. Billy Napier trying to hang on to whatever he has left at Florida. Mm-hmm. You know, even for Sam Pittman, I think there's a faction of that Arkansas fan base that was encouraged. But what you can't do is come home and lose to Trent Dilfer and UAB.
No, absolutely not. And
especially with what the Razorbacks have coming up in terms of SEC play, because I think after this week, it's like 7 straight in the league for Arkansas. It's going to be kind of more that way for just about everybody. And of course, Alabama, Wisconsin, we're going to talk about later in the week, a good bit, another SEC Big Ten matchup coming off of Texas and Michigan last week. So be sure to lock it in right here on Ryer on YouTube coming up later in the week. More second helping. We'll have continuing previewing of college football. So a lot of fun right here on the channel. We hope you'll subscribe. If you haven't already, hit that subscribe button, hit that notifications bell, and a thumbs up would help us out a great deal.
Absolutely.
As well, Brent, enjoyed it, my man.
Look forward to checking in with you in a few days, brother.
Absolutely. Always great stuff from Brent Beard. Always appreciate you guys and gals tuning in here on the channel. So for Brent, Travis Ryer, thanking you once again. And until next time, so long, everybody.